Hi, my name's Rhiannon and I'm the CEO and first-time founder of Travel Talk. I took an idea for a mobile application and content platform from a piece of paper in a bedroom to a company that's now valued at $2.5 million and a React Native application that is used by travellers in over 50 countries around the world. Female Disruptor is where we shine a light on female leadership and development in the technology sector. By sharing these stories, we hope to inspire other women looking to get into tech-related roles and provide a supportive network where you can come for advice and also learn more about coding in React Native. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the fourth episode of Female Disruptor. I'm here today with Nina Salamons, who has a very interesting technology history. She's actually an XR creative producer and filmmaker. She's a diversity advocate and really an all-round player in the technology space. Welcome to the show, Nina.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. I'm really looking forward to hearing your story today because I've been following it over the last 3 years as someone who worked in virtual reality myself. And I think, you know, the things that you've done are really fascinating. So for our audience, do you mind letting people know what you've been doing over the last 3 years?
Oh, God. Okay. Well, let me go from the story into how I got into VR in the first place. So I studied filmmaking for 5 years. I also had a YouTube gaming channel, so I was a hardcore online multiplayer PC gamer. And then I got into XR because I saw augmented reality for the first time. I set up the Women in VR group, which became Unfold later. I ended up working for VR Focus as a presenter, journalist, video content producer for about 2.5 years. Whilst I was there, I also led the VR Diversity Initiative, which is all about teaching underrepresented groups how to make VR or 360 film or anything related to XR. After that, I worked for a company called Cornerstone Partnership, helping with virtual reality and adoption. I'm adopted myself. And then I ended up working for Inition as a sort of biz dev, creative producer. And now, at the same time, I'm also running a company that's bringing virtual reality into prison. I'm also creating a VR film and a music documentary.
Wow. You mentioned some pretty cool things there. And I think just for people listening, let's go through them a little bit one by one. And maybe before we do, for people out there listening who don't know anything about VR, maybe we should sort of let them know how that industry has evolved in the past kind of 3 to 5 years. I obviously worked at HTC Vive for a while, and then I worked at Leap Motion. And, you know, I saw firsthand, I guess, the growth of a new industry. I have huge belief in the technology. You know, it's the way of the world. Sometimes the rest of the world needs to catch up, and that creates struggles, doesn't it, for the people working in that industry? So, I mean, from your perspective, you mentioned AR, XR, VR. Do you want to kind of help people understand a little bit better where VR began when you sort of entered there, and I guess the journey you went on as it evolved over the last 3 years too?
Sure. I first, like many people, probably got into contact with augmented reality before I got in touch with virtual reality. And the reason why I got so excited about it was because I am a huge sci-fi buff and I love science fiction and I love geeky gadgets. And people tell me I'm a little bit of a nerd. I disagree. And augmented reality is a digital layer of information that's put on top of the real world. You have already been put in contact with this if you use Snapchat, if you use Facebook filters, if you use Instagram filters, if now you have a new phone and you use the AR kit. So there are AR games out there. Pokemon Go is the biggest success out there right now. I think if you own the latest phones and you have Google Maps, there's an AR fox that shows you the way, which direction to go to. So that's an example of augmented reality. There's also headsets that have augmented reality as well, which are the Microsoft headsets,
HoloLens,
and the Magic Leap, which I think are technically kind of the future for augmented reality if you're interested in all of that type of stuff. And then in virtual reality is different because you do not see the real world. So there's different types of VR. There's 360 film, which is, quote unquote, it's real life. It's captured just like a normal camera. It's a small circular ball with lots and lots of cameras around. It's records in a circular motion. But there's also something called photogrammetry, where you take tons and tons and tons of photos of real life. You put it inside a game engine and it looks like real life, but it's not, because it's basically still images all stuck together.
And I suppose just to help people latch onto what we're saying there, you mentioned game engine. So that's kind of like if you've ever played something like Fallout 4, you know, and you've played that in 2D, you're obviously in a world, but now you've got Fallout 4 VR that you can actually step inside and suddenly have, you know, you're walking through a world. That's not quite photogrammetry, obviously, but the idea that you can step into a frame and actually interact with it, right?
So there are differences in VR, which I have to explain. I usually have to explain to new clients and people the differences between virtual reality. There's 3 degrees of freedom and 6 degrees of freedom. The differences between the two is with 3DOF, as we call it, is that you can't physically move around in the space. Whilst in 6DOF, if I were to physically stand up in the virtual world and in the real world, they would translate to one another.
They're kind of mimicking your movements, right?
That's right.
So 3DOF is Samsung gear. If you've got a Samsung phone, maybe someone has said, hey, you know, you get that free thing that you can attach to it, and then you're sitting down and it doesn't track your movements. It's not a good idea to walk around with a Samsung gear on your head, is it?
No, it's not. I think that 3DOF is really great for if you're like in an airplane, in a bus, in a car. 6DOF doesn't work that way, and it's more immersive because whatever you do, it's more game-like engine. So a lot of the things are created in a video game engine because it translates to three-dimensional characters, polygons, environments, and therefore everything's built in either Unity or Unreal or other sort of, you know, self-made game engines, to be honest.
Essentially, you're recreating the real world, right? So you've got passive VR that, as you said, it's great to kind of sit down and immerse yourself but not feel like you have to walk around. But then the higher scale version of that, you do need the tech, you do need the room scale, and you need the sensors, right? So therefore that becomes slightly prohibitive. But you know, one thing I just wanted to say for anyone who's never stepped into 6DOF, it's an incredible experience, isn't it? Can you describe the first time that you ever stepped into a VR headset, like an HTC Vive or an Oculus?
Oh my god, first time I tried, I think I was helping out someone do a mixed reality shoot. And I think I was inside the Blue, and it was a Vive. But to be honest, because
well,
I come
tell
from,
people what the Blue is, though.
The Blue is a VR experience that mimics of you being underwater, and there's a lot of fish, and then a giant whale kind of swims past you, and it kind of makes eye contact with you, I suppose. And a lot of people like that because it's breaking what in theater is called the fourth wall, and so you have presence in a spatial environment by reacting to a three-dimensional character or object that's actually not real.
I actually went into the same experience for the first time in VR, and I think that's because there wasn't a lot of content available, you know, back in 2016 or 2015. So these were the first things that people were trying. But the minute I stepped into that, you know, and how it made me feel, you know, that proximity to a whale, knowing that obviously not underwater, there's not a whale there, but I felt like it was there. It changed my life. Did you feel the same way?
I'm gonna be a little bit controversial here, and I could say that I can't remember, but I come from gaming.
Yeah.
So I think that first-person perspective is something that I've already experienced so many times, okay. And maybe it wasn't as shocking as it should have been. I think what really threw me was Google Earth.
Yeah.
That was, you know, putting a location, putting the markers down, going anywhere in the world and then teleporting to it.
Yeah.
That was quite shocking for me.
No, and like, don't get me wrong, I wasn't trying to put words in your mouth. I'm not a gamer in the sense that I use consoles. I used to use a lot of PCs back in the day, but basically what I meant about it sort of transforming my perspective of what's possible is kind of put on this headset and suddenly I saw possibilities. And it wasn't about whales and being underwater. It was more about, oh my God, the fact that I can suddenly transport myself to an entirely different place, yet I'm standing in this room at the time I was in Sydney, you know, throws up endless possibilities. And it seems like, you know, you mentioned some things that you're passionate about. You've been helping people in prisons. Now, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of controversy around whether that is the right thing to be doing with VR, but certainly people in a cell are there for a reason. But with the idea of rehabilitation, VR is a tool that can be used to certainly give them access to the outside world in a safe way. So is that what you found? I don't know.
So I'm doing a trial program with a prison in the UK, one singular prison based up in Nottingham. There are 3 areas that we're working in. The first part is education. So it would be incentivizing prisoners to show up to their educational workshops. right now they're having problems getting prisoners to even just show up, meaning that they can't upskill and that when they are released, they don't have the right skills to find new jobs. The second part is reoffending. We have interviewed three prisoners and they've been in prison for roughly about 20 years each. And the concept is that there's so many youth prisoners coming into prison now. And a lot of them come in for a few weeks and then they go out and then they go back in and then they go back out. And they don't really understand the long-term consequences of their actions. And so the hope is that by storytelling, that these older prisoners will be able to guide these younger youth prisoners. You know, usually in prison, you've got a huge front. You're not going to be honest. You're not going to be vulnerable. You're going to be strong. You're going to be aggressive in order to survive. So this is a nice way of breaking that wall and having a one-to-one with someone that's older, more experienced than you, and who might give a little bit of wisdom. The third part is rehabilitation. And that part is very tricky, a lot of ethical sort of situations. And what I'm finding is that prisons in like Colorado or Alaska or whatever, they're having the exact same issue with taking data and analyzing that data, because it kind of goes, I sense, into the sense of who owns that data, who's responsible for it, what can you do with it, can you manipulate people? But we're working on it from a sense of mindfulness. So we're trying to understand if the rehabilitation process that already exists can be enhanced by using VR as a tool, not necessarily to be the sole thing. So it's scalable.
Right. And I mean, VR has been used as a tool for training. But I mean, coming back to the storytelling aspect, because you're a filmmaker, and obviously, you know, just going back to what we're discussing in prisons, VR is a tool that can be used to evoke empathy, right, in storytelling, because you're able to create that presence and take people or guide people through an experience. The level of emotion someone can feel in response to that is a lot different from watching a film, right?
So I've done several talks recently, which I'd like to bring into the conversation. The first one was a talk about truth in the 21st century. And the second talk was about how you use storytelling for social impact. And the story that I always bring up is a story which initially actually created the film for Cornerstone, is the Being Me film. It's a VR film from the perspective of a child in an abused home that has to do with alcoholism, drug abuse, domestic violence. And it starts off in the womb. You see all of these neural networks above you, and then it dissolves. And by the way, this is a 360 film, so it starts off in a game engine. And then it dissolves into a room where you're a baby and you see these parents trying to feed you, but they're a mess. There's needles on the floor. They're yelling at each other. They're using sharp objects to try and cut your hair. And then it dissolves and you go to school, and now you're looking at the child and you're seeing the child kind of being scolded for their behaviors and actions. The third sequence is a bit where the child comes home and the mother's there, and the mother's, you know, saying, what's wrong? What happened? And the child has problems processing this. Because I'm adopted, this hit me pretty hard. I was handing out awards for best social impact films at Raindance, and this film stuck with me because I thought I was on a route tracing journey. I thought if I could just have had this experience a few years before, I could give it to my parents. Even now, I could give it to my parents and they would understand that I'm having issues controlling my own emotions and understanding my own emotions, which is something that a lot of adopted children have. They don't understand why they do what they're doing. And it's more of a reactionary thing rather than really truly understanding your emotions and acting on it. This was not real, obviously. As a baby, your eyes don't open when you're in the womb. And so therefore, what we recreated was a fictional truth. And I think that if you use virtual reality for social impact, you can project your own insecurities, your own emotions, and feel safe because no one's judging you, no one else is there. And when it came to storytelling and social impact, I was doing another talk about the future of filmmaking at the BFI. And one of the things that I really, really encourage young filmmakers to do right now is, you know, when I started going into filmmaking, I wanted to go to Hollywood. I was going to be making films that I thought were going to change the world, were going to be impactful, I was going to change policies. But I realized Hollywood was just another cog in the wheel entertainment piece. And if you want to tell stories that create impact, you can look at documentary, and that's good. I'm still making documentaries. But there are other ways of telling stories as well. And I really encourage you to look at new technologies like VR, AR, immersive theater, anything that's interactive. Because as I've gone into this sort of career path, a lot of my friends have gone into traditional two-dimensional filmmaking. And that means being a gaffer, being a DOP. And I'm, you know, I introduce VR to my filmmaking friends and they kind of freak out because with new technology comes AI that is now able to set the frame for you with sensors. You know, all those memes about you can't fix it in post. Well, now potentially you can. The sensors are strong enough to do so. The post-production workflows are better. The software that's being created now is better. There's drones that are able to recognize your face and therefore focus on you whilst they fly around. Like, that was not possible when I was growing up. I couldn't even imagine this. And now, you know, for your future, I definitely recommend looking at new technologies and not shying away from them or being scared. You have to be open. You have to adapt. And in my environment, you know, I was there when YouTube just started before Google bought it. And now to see it change to be a multi, you know, billion dollar industry, I missed out on that. I don't plan to miss out on this storytelling because for me, it's perfect because it mixes gaming, it mixes filmmaking, and it creates the impact that I think I wanted to do with my filmmaking. And I think if you're someone who wants to tell a story, one, you have to figure out why you're telling the story, but two, you have to also look at, is this the right medium for me? Should I make a film just because it's VR? No way. You should look at it and think about it from a perspective of you physically interacting with an object or an environment or a person. There's a purpose and reason behind it. And if I do so, it's going to create X, Y, and Z.
Embolden Her is an organization striving to support women working in tech to empower them to become leaders in tech. To find out more, go to emboldenher.org.
It is how you use the technology, yeah. Right? I mean, we're here talking about VR, not because it's a hot topic. In fact, you know, we've seen the ups and downs because you sort of introduced yourself earlier and mentioned you worked for VR Focus, which was a publication about VR. And obviously, you've done some different freelancing for agencies. And, you know, when I first got into virtual reality, obviously, a lot of my friends were like, do you think virtual reality is going to stay around? And, you know, the people that perhaps have never put on a headset or just it wouldn't come across on a daily basis, have an apprehension that this technology is actually going to ever succeed. Now, for you and I who have been in this industry, we see it very differently. We do see a huge future for that. One of the frustrations from my side is that technology hasn't quite caught up. Or to your point, you know, a lot of people who are getting into the filmmaking space go the traditional route because quite frankly, that's where the audience is and that's where the jobs are. Whereas, you know, if you're in VR at the moment, there's not that many of us in there. And, you know, unfortunately, the cost of production is high. Clients who would pay ordinarily for that are a bit apprehensive. Training and enterprise is okay.
I don't know. I would disagree with some of the things that you're saying because VR has changed dramatically.
Yeah.
Dramatically. And that's mostly thanks to Facebook. The Oculus Quest
is
a great example of this. And so when I was working and pitching to clients, a lot of people on my team were saying, no, VR is too expensive. You shouldn't do it. And I'm like, well, actually, look at the software and the hardware now. We're saying that the tech has to catch up, but it is every year or every half year, there's a new piece of hardware coming out.
So don't get me wrong. It's not the providers and the manufacturers of the technology that need to catch up. It's the consumer and end user, the audience. And so basically, from an adoption standpoint, I guess pure marketing, you tend to see that the technology is available. You have the early adopters, but the long tail effect and actually the penetration of that technology is only made possible when it is available to the mass market. And I guess that's where I was coming at it, that if you're kind of going into the space as a creator, as a creative technologist, you might look and think, well, people are still going to watch movies today. Like, unfortunately, if I ask people, hey, go watch some VR content, they might not actually even know where to watch that. So that's where I was coming at it at. And yeah, I'm really excited about the Oculus Quest, actually. I mean, they've removed pretty much all the wires and things like that too, which, I mean, we have to remember, right? We're in the middle of technology, but if we talk to someone who would definitely use the technology, but probably be afraid of it, that's kind of the position I take to help those out there who are like, what is VR? This sounds scary. You sound like a future robot. How are you doing all this stuff? So that's kind of what I wanted to just bring it back to. But yeah, I mean, where we sit today in the industry. I mean, you're doing fascinating things, not only helping prisoners and you know, giving them an aspect of learning, rehabilitation, using this technology for those purposes, you know, more on the consumer side, I suppose, and the storytelling aspect. What kind of new projects are you working on at the moment that perhaps people out there could have a look at?
I mean, all of them are in either pre-production, production, or post, so I'm not able to talk about any of them. The prison project right now is sort of the main big thing. Because I'm just, I guess, recently freelancing, I think I have the right amount of experience knowing the different companies and knowing what's out there. For anybody, they can just come up to me and be like, what do I do? What do I find out? What's VR? What's AR? What's the difference? What headsets out there? What software's out there? All of those questions I basically have the answer to. So my benefit, I think, is that within the short amount of time, this boom, I've been able to figure out, thanks to, I think, the majority of like being at VR Focus and trying out so much content, so much hardware and software, I think I know what works well, what doesn't work well. And that's one of the biggest difficulties. If you're based in South Korea and you're based in South America, you have different industries and different people. They're not talking to each other. And I think there needs to be sort of a larger community of, like, you know, shared code, open data, all
well, that,
that
that's
stuff.
Right, accessibility. And I know that you've done a bit of work as a diversity advocate, but also helping younger women get into, you know, the technology and VR space. And it sounds like, from what you said earlier, you would really be inviting people who are interested in this space to contact you and maybe, you know, learn a bit more, or at least you would happily direct them to some of the places they could go if they want to understand how to maybe follow in your footsteps, because you kind of had to learn it from the ground up too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it really depends on what your skill set is and who you are. I think if you're a creative, you do need to learn technical skills. The biggest problem that I've had is having to rely on other people, and coders and developers are very, very expensive. The good news is that Unity is completely free. There's online tutorials for Unity everywhere. You don't need anything except a good computer. So that's great. Like, that's making it so, so much more accessible.
And for anyone who doesn't know Unity, obviously Unity is used to build mobile applications. It's a game engine, but it's also used for VR. Unreal Engine allows you to do things that are a little bit more fancy, but Unity is a pretty powerful engine, isn't it, for most things that you need to do in virtual reality?
The benefit of using Unity, I think, is that they have a huge community support network and they have a support for VR and AR. So if you're building AR, you're most likely building in Unity. There's a lot more Unity developers than there are Unreal developers. Unreal developers, I really wish you guys were cheaper and more readily available and accessible, because those are highly sought after developers. So if you want to be a good developer, you know, learn all of these things. Then there's also, you know, like Google Blocks. That's also free. You can create three-dimensional objects, bring them into Unity, put them into VR, 3D print them. Like, you know.
It's kind of like Minecraft as well. Like,
kind of.
Right? So
yeah.
If you like Minecraft, there's a really good opportunity to shift some of that excitement into VR and use Unity. Just out of interest then, because you learned Unity, how far did you get? I mean, is it an easy thing to adopt? Or just so we don't sort of like falsely advertise and say, hey, get into Unity. I tried and, you know, the 3D aspects and I guess that's just not entirely for me, but how did you find it?
Oh, God. I'm still in the process. Right now, I'm trying to just finish working on my films. But once I have time, I bought a Coursera course for Unity. I know Unity does online courses. Having said that, you know, Unreal is so, so wealthy because of Fortnite. So they've been having the, like, I think it's $1 million mega grants. So they're willing. I can't remember what the number is. Don't quote me on that. I think, so Unreal has like a grant open where you can apply to build something in Unreal and you will get paid for it. With Unity, you can just learn. Everything's available. Everything's free. The same with Unreal. Both of them are basically free software. You can learn it. It's just the coding language.
Yeah, and they're pretty, like, they do take you through it. As I said, I just don't want to pretend it's, like, for anyone who can just literally jump in, but the instructions are fairly clear, and also there's a lot of open source. Leap Motion had a lot of modules and bits that obviously developers could latch onto to use their controller. I think Leap Motion is now part of Ultra Haptics, but, you know, each and every business out there that is related to VR or creating VR content outside of 360 video is most likely using Unity. And I think for people really interested in going in that direction, whether they want to be a filmmaker or whether they just want to, you know, tell stories in VR, then yeah, looking at Unity, but also understanding how it all interacts together is quite important too, right?
Yeah. So one of the things that we had at VRDI is we thought it was really important for people who made 360 films to understand Unity, because you can do interaction between 360 films and create portals between 360 worlds and go from one place to another. So adding interactivity and that three-dimensional space, you know, learning to code and learning these game engines are quite essential. And there's actually a lot of universities now in the UK that are now starting to add BA and master courses for virtual and augmented reality. It's still very, very new. There's only a few universities in the world who have these courses. But if you want to become a full game VR, AR creator, I recommend going on to a games course and learning that. And then if you want to actually learn and design other things for VR, AR that have to do with medical, for example, or whether it goes into construction or real estate or fashion or all of these other things. If anything, the biggest struggle isn't learning the game engine and the coding. It's actually creating good user interaction and good code for it.
Yeah, and you obviously sort of highlighted that a lot of people will think that VR is very much about gaming, but just because it's a game engine doesn't mean that it doesn't have applications in medical technology, training, real estate, you know, the whole idea that you can transport yourself somewhere and, you know, suddenly be in another place while not even leaving the room is really the appeal. And I think, you know, in the future with the introduction of 5G and the fact that, you know, the frame rates per second, the content that we're seeing inside the headsets is just going to improve. You know, I personally want to say to people, if this does interest you and you do like what you heard about what Nina's done in the last couple of years in VR, then really consider an entry into this space, because, you know, in the next 5 to 10 years, VR will be out there and it will be very prolific. But I suppose if that's not your day-to-day interest point, you're not going to see that at this stage, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think just because you're not interested in gaming doesn't mean you shouldn't get into the interactive space. VR, AR is being used for surgery, live open surgery, real-time information and data, understanding. It's going to creep into literally every single sector, into anything I can possibly think of. There is an application, there is a use. And so therefore, don't just dismiss it because you think it's just for filmmaking or for stories or for gaming. There are actually real applications elsewhere, and you will see potential jobs changing. And you know, there is a huge job market here, and there's a lot of people who want to build and develop. So if you're looking for a future, you know, learn these skills, figure out who's out there, and I think you'd be set for a few years to come.
Indeed. And I personally can't wait to see where you'll be in the next 5 to 10 years. I think you're really going to make a difference in this world, in the VR space, just based on all the experience you have and the passion that you've got and the skills that you have. Look, I think that's all we've got time for today, but thank you so much for joining. I've really enjoyed hearing more about what you've been doing in the VR, XR space. So yeah, thanks.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys have any questions, just tweet me. I'm at Nina_Salomons, S-A-L-O-M-O-N-S. And if you have any other questions that you want to ask or look up what the VR Diversity Initiative is or any of those things, happy to talk about it. And thank you so much for having me on the show.
No worries. And we'll be sure to put those links on the femaledisruptor.co website so that people can find them if they otherwise didn't catch your Twitter handle. So that's all we've got time for today. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.